Our other internal reports will be delivered tomorrow, as well as liaison reports. At this time, we would address item number one. Is there any public comment before we begin on item one?
Actually, Chief, items one and two are no action items, educational items.
Right. So, okay, perfect. Thank you. So, Mr. Michael Cohen, we welcome you from the California Department of Finance. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, members of the Judicial Council, for having me back. Before I start, I did just want to join the chorus of honoring those that you just honored, in particular, Judge Jarre. Over the last couple of years, it's been an honor to work with him. He's always represented the branch with amazing integrity, attention to detail, and passion, and I know he has left my office a number of times frustrated, but it's not for a lack of his skill, and so I wish him all the best in retirement.
Thank you.
What I wanted to cover today, I've got some slides specific to the branch, but before I did that, I thought just a little recap of where we've been as a state from a fiscal standpoint since 2011 is worth going over, just to provide a little bit of perspective. And as I provide my comments and answer your questions, I think it will illuminate how we sort of approach the budget and how we approach the judicial branch's budget as a piece of that process. You'll recall in 2011 when Governor Brown took office, we were facing an immediate $26.6 billion shortfall, $20 billion annual shortfalls for as far as the eye can see. So basically, if we had done nothing every year into the future, we were projected to spend $20 billion more than we were projected to take in. Our state budget is roughly in the range of $100 billion, so we had a 20% shortfall every single year. And that obviously required a change in the way we approached our finances. The state over the prior decade had had numerous rises and falls. The rises largely overlapped with sharp increases in capital gains being earned by the state's taxpayers, which then crashed shortly thereafter. And so we had a period of about a decade of tremendous revenue volatility that was only exacerbated by the Great Recession in 2008-2009 that devastated the base of the state's finances. So to close the gap, we really approached the state budget in forcing all areas to take some very tough reductions. We focused first on efficiency. How do we get the same level of service for less money? But along the way, we also had to have a reorientation of what can the state do? And so in many policy areas, we've asked sort of, is there an appropriate state role here? What is it? And why is that the case? Clearly, the judicial branch is one of the core services of state government. That's never been in question. But in other areas, there were questions, and as it related to realignment in the public safety area, local governments were asked to take more responsibility. In our school districts, we provided more authority and flexibility to our schools so that they could make better decisions without being hamstrung by a lot of state rules. The final piece, as you well know, in the state's budget coming back into balance was the passage of Proposition 30, a temporary tax revenue source, which really gives us a short window here to get our state finances in order, as well as pay off many of the debts and liabilities that were incurred over the prior decade. As budgets were out of balance, oftentimes they were brought back into balance with short-term solutions that were borrowing gimmicks, deferrals of costs, and all of those costs left a strain on the state's current finances. We In 2011, when we counted up these budgetary borrowings and deferrals, the wall of debt, as it became known, we were at $35 billion. We've paid that down at the start of this fiscal year to $26 billion. This budget will reduce that further by more than $10 billion. And the plan is really to take this window of opportunity that the voters have provided through Proposition 30 to get our fiscal house in order, stabilize our finances. But the revenues are temporary, and so as we've approached our budgeting, we've been incredibly cautious about making more ongoing commitments than the state can really afford. When we make an ongoing commitment in this administration, the entire focus is on, can we make that commitment for the long term? Are we going to be able to back it up with actually having the money down the road, as opposed to the roller coaster that every state program within the state's portfolio, as well as recipients of the state's programs, have had to deal with these ups and downs, which has not been healthy. And so the final piece on a long-term basis of reestablishing the state's fiscal capacity and stability is a solid rainy day fund. The voters passed a rainy day fund about a decade ago, but in its short time, it's proven not to be strong enough in terms of when you put money in and too free on when you pull money out. And so that's why the governor has put such a strong commitment this year to getting a more solid rainy day fund into the state constitution that really is tied to those peaks and valleys. So when capital gains tax revenues surge, as we know they will over in the coming years, we put more money away than in those years when capital gains are a smaller share of our budget. It's really that volatility that has been the state's biggest nemesis over the last 15 years or so in keeping a stable budget. So with that, let me turn to the judiciary, more specifically the trial courts. Here you see trial court funding. 2007-08 is typically the peak of finances in state government before the recession started, as well as the four most recent budgets. I imagine all of your eyes will go to the bottom line, where you'll quickly notice that this year's budget, you're at $2.6 billion, and at your peak, you were at $2.8 billion. And there's no reason to hide that there is a reduction in court funding from your peak level, and that is true throughout state government. And so it's a matter of how we all deal with that level of reduced funding. The other key piece on this slide that I would point out are the middle rows, where from 2011-12 to 2013-14, you'll see hundreds of millions of dollars of one-time offsets to state funding. And this was intentional, that at the time that the deepest cuts were put into place, we in the administration were very clear that those were permanent cuts. But we recognized the difficulty of an immediate transition to that lower level of funding. And so that explains the transfers from various special funds over that three-year period, as well as the use of local trial court reserves. Spending those down was part of a cognizant effort to try to give the branch time to adjust to the lower level of funding. Turning to this year's budget specifically, as you well know at this point, there's an increase of $160 million general fund provided compared to the prior year. That $160 million combined with the $60 million of 2013-14, those two numbers were really in the, as I said, the cuts were permanent. These are restorations that have been made over and above what was kind of expected in the long-term plan when in 2012-13, when sort of the final pieces of state budget cuts were put in place. I realize that the $160 million is well below what you as a branch advocated for. It's well below what you feel is necessary to run the branch at the level that you've suggested. I do want to say, though, that the $160 million, you should view that as a real win within the state's budget context, that the number of programs that have been offered permanent, ongoing increases in state funding in the last two budgets are very, very small outside of those areas where we really have little to no control. So we have a constitutional funding formula that determines how much we provide for our K-14 schools. We have the rules of federal health care reform, which are driving our health care costs up by over $2.4 billion over a two-year period. All of those costs are really outside of the state's immediate control, whereas there are a number of very compelling interests that have come to my office, to the Capitol at large, looking for increased funding, and the judiciary is one of those areas that we've been able to, because it's been a priority, to provide some increased funding, acknowledging that it's not as much as the branch advocated for. The other main point I would make is that this budget offers you something that the prior one didn't, and that, again, many other areas of state government don't have the same type of framework, is that we tried to frame the 2014-15 budget proposal in the context of providing the judiciary stability. And so it's really a two-year framework. The three bullets at the bottom of this slide really lay out the components of that would carry forward, as I'll talk about in a minute, to 2015-16. So the first piece was just a general operating increase of 5%, which amounts to $86 million. The second piece was the recognition that the branch and trial courts face costs that are really outside of your immediate control, particularly in the employee benefit category. So retirement rates, that's an area that we are all struggling with as we have huge unfunded liabilities that are driving our annual costs higher and higher, but you at a trial court level have little to no control over that. In a similar vein, healthcare costs for your employees. And so that $43 million was intended to address those sort of unavoidable employee benefit costs. And then the third piece was $31 million to offset a potential reduction in fee revenues. And as Judge Jarre pointed out a few moments ago, one of the ways through the last number of years that the state has dealt with a diminished capacity to provide general fund dollars to trial courts has been a shift to a greater reliance on fee revenue. And that has put trial courts more at risk based on their volatility. And frankly, my staff as well as your staff needs to, going forward, spend more time putting our best analytical minds forward in terms of forecasting what those revenues are so that we can accurately know the effects of what's going on with fee revenues and how that will play out into trial court's budgets. So this $31 million was intended to recognize the risk that based on trends through last year, there's a distinct possibility that fee revenues in some areas are going to continue to decline, and here you have a guarantee that the state general fund will backfill up to $31 million in those fee revenues. So just to highlight some other funding components, the budget includes up to $1 million for potential increased security costs related to as new courts are completed and come online. In many cases, we expect those courts to be more efficient as it relates to security costs, but we have discovered the possibility that in particularly in some of the smaller counties, that the court, the new courts are going to drive security costs higher, and we were committed to covering those. In addition, $15 million to expand or establish collaborative courts and pretrial and risk assessment programs. This was part of a greater package that the budget includes designed to reduce recidivism in the criminal justice system. And so we're excited and looking forward to a high variety of proposals coming in for that $15 million that really stresses innovation, ways we can improve our overall system of criminal justice and reduce recidivism. And then third and finally on this slide, a $40 million one-time augmentation to boost the branch's capital outlay and infrastructure program. So looking to the future, the budget was signed in June, and my staff almost immediately turned to building the next year budget that will release the governor's proposed budget on January 10th. And as I mentioned, we really view 2014-15 and 2015-16 as bookends to provide the branch some stability as you do deal with that permanent lower level of funding. And so we're expecting to provide an additional 5% general purpose increase in the proposed budget, continuing to provide that ongoing funding to account for the benefit costs that you don't have any control over, continuing to support your efforts to make sure that we have an equitable distribution funds across the 58 courts. And then finally, working with you as well as the future of the California Court System Commission, really to take these 2 years to as an opportunity to step back, as Judge Jargon alluded to a few moments ago. I know that many of your courts have done many innovative things. They have become more efficient out of necessity, and so we view this as an opportunity within this two-year period to assess the court system as a whole, continuing those efforts that have happened over the last few years, figure out how we build all of those efficiencies and innovations into the system as a whole, so that we can move forward together and meet that goal of providing equal access to high-quality justice. I think we as an executive branch share that with you as a judicial branch in terms of what the expectation is and what the goals are of your branch. So with that, I'm happy to take your questions, and I do just want to echo the chief's comments in closing in terms of our working relationship. I've got two of my staff here, Chris Ferguson and Brendan Murphy, who are longtime budget veterans but new to the judicial branch's budget, and we want to make sure that there's a good flow of information and perspectives. That's not to say that you're going to be satisfied at the end of each budget process. I can guarantee you that there's virtually no one that walks away from the state budget really feeling like they got everything that they need, want, or deserve. But that's really a reflection, as I started with, the constraints on the state's finances, and that changing from a world in which we overcommit and then have to make drastic changes as we hit recessions and downturns in capital gains, to one in which we can have a much better and more consistently financed judicial branch, executive branch, and legislative branch.
Thank you, Michael. Justice Hull?
Yes, thank you, Chief. Mr. Cohen, thank you very much for your time. I enjoyed and found informative your presentation when you were here last, and I find this one equally informative and all. I just wanted to ask, you were referring to, in this, the fiscal year that we're in now, the amount of money that the branch advocated for, and I think that that may refer to the $266 million approximately in additional funding that we estimated that we needed to so-called tread water. And I've been told, and I don't know if it's true, and I'm sure you can tell me, that basically the Department of Finance agreed with that figure as far as a treading water amount. Am I misinformed in that?
No, I think that we did get to a common understanding of the level of funding year over year and how many of these offsets that I had in my first slide had occurred. It's really where the difference in perspective came was more, okay, that you've had sort of this time period to adjust to some level of the lower funding so that treading water would be on a strictly, if everything being business as usual, per se, and so it's a matter of what how much of that could be operationalized is sort of the budget term of art that has tended to be thrown around the last year or so. But I think that it's fair to say that we knew when we made the permanent reductions in the judicial budget over the last few years that there would be a reduction in funding. And so that's the same that many other areas of the budget has had to do. And treading water isn't, I'm not sure it's the right term, but it became the parlance. That wasn't a luxury that we had. That to go with the metaphor, I mean, I guess it would be everyone needed to figure out a different way to swim to shore.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Herman and Judge Rosenberg.
Mr. Cohen, again, I echo Justice Hall's comments. Thank you very much for coming back and making the presentation to us. And I'm chair of the Judicial Council Technology Committee. So you mentioned efficiencies, working forward with efficiencies, and I wondered two questions. First, does the governor or the Department of Finance have anything specific in mind relative to efficiencies that we can employ? My second question is funding for information technology and increasing access to justice for our stakeholders and court users fit in terms of thinking about efficiencies?
Sure. We've tried not to kind of tell the branch how to become more efficient. I know that in some respects it's more frustrating. You would, for us to say, well, become more efficient, you'd rather just have us give the answer, at least from our perspective. We've tried not to do that for give you the opportunity to struggle with a very, very difficult question on your own. That being said, we're absolutely committed to the Chief's commission, and we'll participate in that however we can to struggle with it with you together to provide to get to the answers. So it's not that we're not walking around with some sort of secret book that as soon as they tell us the 10 magic answers, they'll be let into the kingdom. So on your second question, in terms of technology, absolutely, I think technology is part of the solution to becoming more efficient, and it's an area that every government at the local level, state level, federal level really struggles with how to do it cost effectively, on schedule, on time, and make the systems do what needs to get done without being burdened by sort of excessive functionality that's not really a core. And so but technology often has one-time costs with the payback over time. So I'm certainly very open to a technology plan from the branch that if it's driven by becoming more efficient and more modern and improving public service, absolutely.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg, then Judge Walsh, David Yamasaki, and then Judge Stout, then Judge O'Malley.
Mr. Cohen, I certainly join the other members of the Judicial Council saying thank you for coming the last time and coming again today. It is very much appreciated, and we always find this information useful and the dialogue useful. At the risk, it's always risky to look at 1 year and draw any conclusions from it, but as was said earlier, we're noticing the statistics are showing a drop-off in case filings of virtually 10%. That's troubling, particularly in light of the fact that we see so many increases locally with realignment, increases in the workload of judges and courts. It's been speculated that perhaps the decline of 10% relates to the increase in filing fees, which discourages people from filing, and the closure of courts and courthouses. Does the Department of Finance have any thoughts or perspective in why we might be seeing such a 10% decline?
I don't think I have a whole lot to add to. I think you just quickly captured a pretty complicated topic and have some good hypotheses, and only to say that we're also very much interested in the answer to that and are very ready to work with you to try to figure out what, because depending on what the answer is to the question and whether it's a short-term change or a longer-term trend, it'll change how we would react to it. But it's on our watch list in terms of things that we want to understand and want to have a good answer for so that we can move forward and go from there.
Thank you. Judge Walsh, then David.
Thank you. I want to join in thanking Mr. Cohen for coming today, as you did last year. I found you always to be very straightforward and approachable. I just want to clarify one thing and then ask you a question. One is, we talked about efficiency, and Judge Jarr is correct. The Chief was kind enough to appoint me to chair our efficiency task force, and, of course, I invite you to go on courts.ca.gov and check out efficiencies. You'll see many of them. But please, please remember that efficiency and justice don't always equate. It is the case that it is more efficient to close down outlying courtrooms, as Santa Clara County did, or just announced they're going to do. It is not more just. In fact, it is the antithesis of equal access to justice to adopt that efficiency. People have to travel much longer to get justice. So we're committed as a branch and we're committed as trial courts to efficiencies, and we will never stop developing those and benefiting from them, but we can't efficiency our way out of a deep budget reduction because people get hurt and justice gets hurt. My question goes to the 5%. I've been told, and you've mentioned this, it's good news that there'll be a 5%. It's a two-year plan with a 5% increase built into it, and as I understand, that 5% would be $86 million. My question is, on the benefit increase side, which you've also committed to, and that's great, this year, basically the employer side of the benefit increases were funded at about two-thirds of the increase. Can we hope for a full coverage the coming year? And my second question is the 5% is great, but is it sort of like, you know, when you, I used to write wills for my client, if anybody contests this will, they get, you know, a dollar. I mean, is it, if we aren't happy with the 5% and we ask for more, are we going to get pounded, or can we say 5% is a good start, now let's keep talking?
I never give anyone a hard time for advocating more money than I'm offering. That's people don't get penalized for being passionate advocates for and bringing forward additional information. In terms of the benefit increase, we did reduce it by, as you said, about a third, based on our estimate of where. We weren't at the pension reform standard of employees paying for their retirement. So what we've said is that when we build the January budget, we'll have updated information from your staff, and to the extent that that employees are moving towards the pension reform standard of paying for half of their of the normal kind of annual pension costs, that we would you know, provide that additional $22 million or so. So it really was a signal of the governor's commitment to the implementation of PEPRA, the 2012 Pension Reform Act, and we're encouraging every branch of government, every layer of government, to move towards those standards, and so that funding is tied to that. But we'll take another look at it as we build the budget.
Judge Stout, Judge O'Malley, then Mary Beth Todd. I'm sorry, I missed David. First, David.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Chief. Mr. Cohen, good afternoon, and thank you for being here today, and we hope to also see you on the invitation to have you and your staff join us in September. To take a first-hand look at how operations work here in Santa Clara. And I have a similar question to Judge Walsh, although we did not rehearse it, and one of them relates to the benefits. I took note of a couple things that you said, and they demonstrate sound fiscal policy. One is the importance of having a rainy day fund. As I understand it today, the rainy day fund is about $1.6 billion. And the other thing that you mentioned was the importance to fund the benefit increases because they don't necessarily represent things that we have under our control. So I'm very interested in kind of touching upon that issue just briefly. We were shorted about $22 million, and those expenses that we sustained were not within our control. And we certainly appreciate moving in the direction that we did this year. I've been on the council for 3 years, and it started moving in a downward direction, and we are certainly moving upward, and certainly understand the challenges that the state has with the finances. But I know that there's a lot of emphasis being put on looking at courts in a similar way that other departments in the state are being funded. I understand that other state departments, the executive branch increases that are on the management side of the House are fully funded, and I'm hoping that that same approach can be recognized going forward. Again, we're not talking about what employers may contribute for employees, their contributions, but rather what employers have an obligation to provide. Again, same approach is what we're hoping to attain, and perhaps that's something that you had already addressed, and I'm hoping that that nexus can also be part of what we can see for us as well. The other thing has to do with the rainy day fund. As you know, we have had a similar fund that we have called upon to even out the highs and the lows. I think that's a term that you used, because of the great uncertainty that exists right now with respect to funding for the trial courts. But in the absence of that rainy day fund, many courts, notwithstanding the great work that WAFM is doing for many courts, there are many courts like mine, Santa Clara, who are having to close. And I know that there's a desire to have a same level of service with less funds, but the fact is we have reduced services with less funds, and we're not able to achieve that. But with the benefit of having this rainy day fund that I think your office is very supportive of, governor is very supportive of, we have been very, very frugal with those resources. We've used those resources to keep courtrooms open, keep employees in their positions. And we're hoping that that is something that can get further examination going forward, because right now at a 1% level, we simply have a terrible, terrible time planning for the future or keeping those critical services that I think you appreciate that the citizens of our state need. So I bring that forward, and perhaps if you can share with us your thoughts about the 1% and how does that differ perhaps with the idea that your office and the governor's office has about the importance of having a rainy day fund. And can we have the same?
Sure. So first let me just react to David's comment about visiting his court. As I started in California budgeting, I sort of learned the culture of that the way you learn about programs is by going out and seeing them and talking to the people that are running things on a day-to-day basis, seeing what kind of work it is. It provides a completely different perspective than having a conversation about something in my office or in a Department of Finance employee's office. So my staff is going out this fall to do a number of site visits, sort of to hit smaller, medium, and larger courts. I'm going to try to join them on as many as possible because even after doing budgeting for as many years as I have, I have a huge capacity to learn more about how things work, and so I'm very much looking forward to doing that this year and in the coming years. Second, on the rainy day fund and local reserves, I think for us the 1% reserve is really a reflection of one of the final pieces to trial court funding moving to a state-funded system, and so that we at the state, as we build the budget, are responsible for trial court's funding level. And we have to weigh the demands on your court systems against many other demands for California students, California residents, taxpayers, all of those types of things. And the 1% limit was designed to basically give all of the resources available within the state budget and weigh them against each other. How do you prioritize? What is the highest use? And the rainy day fund at the statewide level will allow us to particularly do that during the next budget crisis. The rainy day fund is not going to be the panacea for recessions. There will be a recession somewhere down the road, and in fact, we're already past the halfway point of the longest recovery in the state's history. So it's coming in the next few years, and we want to be able to balance all of the competing demands for those dollars as we enter recessions. That said, we've been committed to making sure that the change doesn't provide undue hardship on courts. Obviously, it's causing all of you to change the way you do business, and I think we've shown a commitment to talking about what those changes are, if we can help mitigate any of them. But the fundamental premise that we do think it's appropriate to sort of have a single rainy day fund for all contingencies isn't likely to change. That said, we recognize that the branch had specific needs, and that was why, as part of it, we created authority for this body to control a 2% reserve for unanticipated expenses. And so I think that model is still makes sense for this body to weigh the challenges of all of the 58 courts. But as I said, we're happy to continue to have that dialogue. On your first point in terms of employee benefits, absolutely the not covering that last $22 million of benefit costs was an effort to sort of achieve parity of in terms of our executive branch workers increase their annual contributions to pensions typically by 3% and are now sharing in half of sort of the annual taking outside the unfunded liability piece of it, sharing in half of the annual cost of the pension system. And as your employees get to that standard, that's that was my previous comment that we would view the $22 million as getting provided at that point.
Thank you. Judge Stout, Judge O'Malley, Mary Beth Todd, Judge So.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, Mr. Cohen. Again, I echo everyone's sentiments. We appreciate your being here. In addition to the obviously desperate need to reinvest in trial court operations, there's another issue of concern, and that's in the area of adequate funding for court-appointed counsel and dependency or child abuse and neglect cases. I know the legislature was supportive of increase last year. It's my understanding that current funding is only sufficient to fund a caseload of 250 clients per attorney, well above judicial counsel standards for attorney caseload. And you know, obviously here we're talking about children alleged to have been victims of abuse and neglect of their parents, or from the parents' perspective, you know, the government intervening to remove children and possibly terminate parental rights. And funding here is a concern, as I indicated. I understand the legislature was supportive last year, and wondering if we're on the radar screen, if you will, to see some increased funding in this area.
Absolutely, you're on the radar. As you say, it was in the mix this year and among the few priorities that were able to be funded. It didn't receive any increased funding, but it continues to be an area that we're looking at, and I know you have some strong advocates both in the legislature and within the administration. So it's something that we'll be taking another look at in the coming months.
Thank you,
Judge O'Malley.
Hi, and thank you very much for being here again this year. Just a couple of questions. The first is, there was a reduced kind of collection in fines and fees this year, and I noticed in your PowerPoint, you mentioned that the budget had accounted for 30.9 of that. Is there going to be a position in the future where if there's a reduced fines and fees that, you know, the state, as you mentioned, is responsible for the trial court funding, that you would pay all of that and not just part of it? I think we were short $22.7 million this last time.
On the fees, as I mentioned, we recognize that you're trial court funding is more at risk than it used to be, given the higher percentage of your revenues that are coming from fees. I think my first point is going to be wanting to get a better handle on the estimating of those revenues. And so there's always going to be some uncertainty within the revenues, but to the extent we can do a better job at following the trends, and that would be my first priority is to build the budget based on the most realistic estimate we can get, and I think that'll reduce the level of risk that you enter a year with, and so I'd like to try that in the coming year, but it's something certainly we can revisit depending on how it works.
Thank you. And then the justification for not kind of making up the difference of the 22.7 this year?
The 22.7, there was a fair bit of confusion about the number well into the process, but the differentiation was really that it was the carry-in shortfall versus the area where I felt strongly that we should backfill is the estimate going forward of if we're going to build the budget expecting $100 million, but everyone realizes it's more likely to be 70, then that's not really fair. That was more kind of the prior year's revenue collections, a little bit different, but also a matter of, as I say, some confusion.
Any hope for a recovery of that in the near future?
I don't see how in the current year we do anything about it, that sort of budget decisions get made and then we tend to need to live with them within the year. But absolutely, as we build the 2015-16 budget, we'll revisit all the aspects of the fee revenues and hopefully do a better job at forecasting them.
And then finally, with the permanent lower level of funding, do you believe that the governor believes that we're providing a level of access to justice sufficient to a first world democracy?
I think the governor believes that we can always become more efficient in providing all types of government services, and that this two-year window is an opportunity for us to figure out how much efficiency is still there that doesn't threaten access to justice, and then at some point, clearly, you go too far, and we're not we don't believe we're there, but we also have no interest in finding out what that looks like.
Thank you. So, in the interest of time, I'll call on three more speakers, and then we'll be concluding this agenda item. That's Mary Beth Todd, Judge So, and Judge Branlin.
Thank you, Chief. Hi, I'm Mary Beth Todd. I'm the Court Executive Officer with the Sutter County Superior Court. I don't think we've met before. Thank you for being here and being one of the last three. I've got to pick my question wisely, don't I? First, I just wanted to follow up on some of the comments that have been made here with respect to some of the actions in the last few years. And I think, just to give you our perspective, I know I'm kind of exhausted from the whole process. We've had, you know, the horrific economic decline. We've had a lot of our budget processes change. It feels like some decisions have been made from our perspective on the fly. I'm not suggesting that they really were. Just we really weren't tapped into something was coming. And the most recent one was the benefits reduction based on employer contributions to retirement. And it just seems to me that some of these things we can have a discussion about so that we could get on the same page and see it coming and plan for it, or have the opportunity to explain. And the more we can do that, I would greatly encourage that. But my question for you is, given it has to be exhausting on your end too. I mean, you've come in new, you know, we've had the decline, hopefully we're pulling out of it. And so my question for you is, do you see this, the current budget process that the branch has been participating in, as the process we will continue to see going forward? Or is there a sense that if you get us to a particular state, we might be able to go back to something akin to SAL or some sort of a formulaic approach? I did appreciate your comments with respect to efficiency and wanting to be respectful of the grant of the branch and giving us the discretion to determine where we feel we can gain those most. And I'm wondering if there is any type of a plan that once we get to some base, then we might be able to build up from there for the future.
Sure. I know that we sort of have a plan through 2016, and what comes after that I think is more open-ended. Definitely want to see what comes out of the future of the Courts Commission, and hopefully there's some guidance in there in terms of what goes forward. I think I got last year a question about if we, you know, SAL, and would I recommend going back to that? And I'm fairly sure I said no last year, and I continue to believe that that's not the best approach for either the executive branch or the judiciary. That it just, while the increase, of course, I'm sure was welcome by the branch each year, knowing what was funded and what wasn't funded became an impossibility. That whenever someone wanted to not provide money for something, it was like, oh, well, that was part of SAL. And then if there was something else was, oh, no, that wasn't part of SAL, that's outside of SAL, and you need to provide additional money if you want that. And so it caused more confusion outside of just the strict dollars and cents than I think is right, that the budget process should do a better job of delineating what exactly we think we're funding. That said, as I said, this year's budget and next year's budget will include a general purpose 5% increase, so that there is a pot of money that we view as sort of allocated to your highest priorities within the branch after we've already covered some of these other expenses. So, but I don't think going back to SAL is what we'll have in 2016-17 and beyond. I just don't know what exactly it's going to look like yet.
Thank you. Judge So, then Judge Brandon.
Thank you. I know that you're aware that under the current allocation to the branch, there are going to be increased delays, reduced access for court users, closing of courthouses, and the closing of courtrooms. And I know you try and forecast the economic climate in the future. So what is the prognosis?
I mean, in terms of the overall economy, the prognosis we see is a continued modest expansion to where the national growth will be in the 3% range in terms of GDP. Don't really see the factors aligning to having a big, strong recovery, but also on the immediate horizon don't see anything for a recession. That said, I did put that caution in that we're sort of on borrowed time at this point in terms of knowing that a recession's getting closer. Just the economists don't have a good way to predict when that exactly is going to hit. And so our hope here is within the Proposition 30 window, we do as much as we can to stabilize and fortify key and critical government programs so that we're in the best shape possible when that recession does come.
And then lastly, Judge Brandley.
Thank you, Chief. Mr. Cohen, I have a comment and a question for you. First, with regards to the comment, as you know, in 2007, the legislature and the governor passed AB 159, which created 50 additional judgeships that have been authorized but have never been funded. And under our WAFM formula, the funding for those judgeships and the disbursement of those judges greatly affect two severely under-resourced courts, namely Riverside and San Bernardino. Each of them would receive 9 judges. And as far down as they are in judicial strength, it would be a huge benefit to them. So the question would be, what steps and what prognosis do you have about getting funding for those judgeships in the future?
It's a difficult issue given all of the fiscal constraints I've talked about this afternoon in terms of and adding, if you presume that it's a fixed amount of money, which in kind of my world there's a trade-off for everything, and you do have a fixed pot, it's what doesn't happen if you fund those 50 judgeships. Is it that the rest of the courts around this circle have even less funding? Is it some other program outside of the judicial branch that doesn't get the funding? So it's again, it's on our on our radar in terms of the changing demographics of the state, but I don't have a good prognosis for you in terms of that funding's around the corner for them, and there's a distinct trade-off if that funding is provided. So I unfortunately, I think my last question ended on it was not the happiest note, but it is a reality of our budget situation that every demand, such as the additional judgeships, has a reaction someplace else in our budget. But it's something we'll continue to look at. Since I didn't respond to each of you, thank you very much for having me. I'm very pleased to be able to share this time with you, and it does very much kind of help the communication and making sure that I have the best information available to me as I advise the governor on the state's fiscal matter. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael, for coming. Thank you always for the continuing dialogue. Thank you for sharing your thought processes. As I understand, we know we have different points of agreement and disagreement, but we always appreciate the dialogue. Thank you for bringing Chris and Brendan, who I'd asked to stand, please, so that folks can see you. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it.